Welcome to the Rocklopedia Fake Bandica, America's favorite home for the fake bands of the 70s, 80s, and today. This week's installment is a bit different than some of our other episodes. We're starting to look at a band that is, to be honest, not that famous. Not at all. But it represents a musical joke that keeps coming up again and again through human history. What's the joke? Well, stick around and find out. This is the Rocklopedia Fake Bandica. Hey, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Are you ready to rock? Are you ready for a conversation about fake bands? If it's the latter, then great. I'm Charles Rempel, and I'm here with Alan Benson.
Hello, hello.
T. Michael Childs.
A pleasure, as always.
And we're not the only people who do this show. I mean, we're the three of the six in the group who did it, but the other three are doing a lot on this show.
Yes. On the back end stuff.
Exactly.
Rob Terrell and Galen Black are doing so much of this back end editing and everything.
That's why you refer to him as your backdoor man. Is that why?
Was that just between us? We'll table that for a second.
Okay. Ixnay, they
do so much, and they're talking on our lists or our emails and everything about moving minus 16 to minus 14. And all. I have no idea what.
None of the stuff that I understand.
It just lets me focus on the good stuff about trying to find fake bands and such. So we really appreciate it. And then we had Jason Torchinski. He was on the pod last week.
Last week, yeah.
He does all the artwork for us. And
unless we run this out of order.
No, this is going to be, yeah, it's true.
It could be years ago.
Mental note, don't run it out of order.
Right.
We were a six person group. Those three are still an integral part of this show. I just want to make sure.
Yeah. And Jason's always a real pill. Pip. He's a real pip.
A pip.
A peach. A pal.
Okay.
So, folks out there, when we talk about Muppet bands, guys, what's the first one that comes to mind?
Well, there's Dr. Teeth and the
Electric Mayhem, of course.
I was going to say the Lords of Mayhem. I was like, no, that's wrong, isn't it?
That's funny because last night I had it as Dr. Teeth and the Women. I was like, no, that's not right either.
Was that your autocorrect? My autocorrect doesn't understand half of the bands and stuff.
Oh, no, yeah, it's pretty awful, like, yeah.
And there's, of course, Rolf, the piano-playing dog.
Right, yeah.
Well, like Kermit and Miss Piggy right off the bat.
Oh, yeah, Kermit had a hit, even, song.
Yeah.
Ernie from Bert and Ernie had a hit song with Rubber Ducky.
But it doesn't count as a fake band, if I recall correctly.
We'll get to that.
Episode one.
Later.
They're also, in the more modern era, there's the Muppets. From the movie here, the alternate Muppets.
That was a great bag.
We'll cover a lot of these in a future episode.
Well, Dr. Teeth, they had their own show on Disney.
Yeah,
Disney
Plus, right? Only made one season, strangely enough, because it actually got better. I think better ratings than the Muppets reality office show that came out a few years ago. But I don't think it even lasted as long as that. Which weird.
It's a low down dirty shame. I would be more.
That's that Keenan Ivory Ways.
I was gonna say, was that Keenan Ivory Ways or was that, I think it was Keenan Ivory.
Anyway, what we're gonna begin with instead is we will give Dr. Teeth his due in a future episode.
Oh, probably, but, yeah, full episode all themselves. Yeah. It has to be.
But instead, we're gonna start with a lesser known act that really spotlights the appeal of Jim Henson's work, which is like very silly, but like if you've seen especially some of his earlier stuff. Surprisingly dark.
Oh, yes. We were just talking about he had this run of commercials for Wilkins Instant Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like a proto Kermit and this big kind of weird kind of sponge guy with him, I guess. I don't know. Just amorphous shaped kind of Muppet. And one of them would just beat on the other one for not drinking the coffee or stab him in the back.
What, literally with a knife?
Yes, there was an episode where he's like, do you drink Wilkins? And he's like, no. And then all of a sudden you see him swing a knife into the guy's back. He's like, ah! And he's like, just a stab at the dark with a little smile like, hoo-hoo. I'm mischievous. You stabbed a guy in the back for not drinking instant coffee.
Okay, this goes a little past Warner Brothers level of cartoon violence.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, there's some of the commercials which, oh, they're adversarial, but then there's some of them where he's just like, you know, do you drink this coffee? No. Hit you with a hammer.
So we're getting to itchy and scratchy levels of violence now.
I mean, yeah, it was darling. It was so cute to watch these Muppets just beat the crap out of each other.
But
well, one beating the crap out of the other. The other one never reciprocated.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. But the band we're going to talk about is actually a band that probably would not even be on people's top 10 or their Muppet Mount Rushmore, which we won't even get into, because somehow I'm sure the Ruddles are going to sneak on there.
They will.
The amazing Marvin Suggs and his Muppaphone.
Yeah, if they made a top 10 of Muppets music, that they would. I don't think people would even remember that.
Yeah, no, I don't think at all. So
they might scrape in the bottom 100.
So who are we talking about? I'll play a little clip.
Right now, friends, I am proud to present a group of performers that I personally discovered in the waiting room of a bus station in Toledo, Ohio. They weren't performing there. They were just waiting. But anyhow, let's bring them on with a big hand. Marvin Suggs and his Muppaphone.
Okay, 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 okay. Thank you, and gracias, thank you. Hey, my beloved Marvin Suggs. And now, presenting the performing members of the Muppaphone.
Attention. Tuning up.
Ow. 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 Ow.
Oh, no. Move it, Marvin. Move it, move it, Marvin. Move it. Move it. Attention.
Tuning up.
Ow. 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 Ow.
Move it, Lucy. Move it, move it, move it, move it. Move it.
Tuning up.
Ow, 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 ow.
Yes, yes, oh yes, yes, Marvin, you've done it.
Good night. Ow.
And now, Lady of Spain.
Be some.
So, as a recap, they were introduced in 1976 in the Rita Moreno episode, and it was like for the first season of The Muppet Show. And in that, they played Lady of Spain, and they came back later that season to play Pure Imagination, the Ben Vereen episode. But so the thing is, and it I don't I think it comes through in the clip, but it is these little very cute fuzzy little balls of just adorableness.
And felt.
that have these like nervous expressions as this guy beats on them with a hammer and with like a nice little mallet, and he whacks them and they yelp in tune. And so it's like Rain's like a little xylophone, and he just kind of like boop, boop, you know, and it's like that, only they're yelping in pain.
And this is a great physical sight gag that Jim Henson invented.
No.
What?
Oh, no, no, no. And we'll get into that, because we're going to go really deep into this gag.
So, okay, so he didn't invent it.
No, the joke Charles mentioned in the introduction was, in fact, this gag of hitting something to make music. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go deep.
Yeah, well, I would point out to our listeners, you might want to take notes.
Yes.
Because this will be on the quiz.
We're going so deep, it'll put your ass to
Did you just go ice cube on them?
Yes, I went a little ice cube on them, so yes. Although, when you say it, the way I did it kind of just made, like, he might have just bored the woman to death.
That's what
it
I
probably
assumed.
Wasn't quite. This may not have been the best day. This might not have
it
been.
It was not a good day.
This is a top 10 day. Not a great day. But, so, Marvin Suggs, who was kind of like a generic wannabe musician because he appeared in several other things. He has an act with singing food, which we're going to get to.
Oh, right. That's right.
So
he's not always using the Muppet. He's got different acts.
He actually, in the Muppet movie, he's just spinning like a flamenco dancer at one point in the crowd scene. And he's just kind of like, so, but he clearly was like, Frank Oz seemed to really like him. And he like would get him into a lot of things.
Yeah.
So, but then after the first season, he kind of vanished for a couple seasons. And this was the Muppet Show was a huge success. And maybe they were trying to lean more away from the more anarchic kind of evil, mean beating things. But then in season three, comes in and he has a great little bit, which is a Kermit is interviewing him. And, they have like a little great little bit about the fates of these little Muppaphone animals.
Right.
Marvin, the question that most people ask.
Oh, the answer is mutual love and respect. The Muppaphones, they adore me. Shut up!
Marvin, are these the original Muppaphones?
Oh, no. I have to replace them every 2 or 3 months. They go flat.
You mean they get off key?
No, flat.
Ow!
Like little pancakes. Thank you!
What happens to them then?
I don't think you want to know.
Yes.
So, as a side note, if you're a listener in the U.S. Reliving your childhood and you remember seeing that, you lying. Because that's something that Disney Plus... as it's called a UK spot because they didn't have commercials. And so the shows were slightly long. They oftentimes had little bits that didn't make it over to the West.
Okay.
So, but you can see them on Disney Plus. So then a later episode, Leslie Ann Warren, and it's kind of funny, the names I've read off these celebrities.
This is the toast of the 70s.
This really is.
It's beautiful. You read all the hosts for the Muppet Show.
It is kind of like on the dartboard for the Love Boat about when they're throwing, like, who are you calling up? All right, Rita Moreno.
Well, as
Leslie Ann Warren.
As the show went on, though, and got so popular, I mean, celebs were begging to get on the show. And I think they graduated to bigger and better guests.
I don't think these are bad guests.
No. I'm not saying they're bad guests. I'm saying bigger and better.
Was Charo on the list? Charo should have been.
A host. I don't think she ever interacted with the Muppaphone. But anyway, in the Leslie Ann Warren one, she actually was supposed to be accompanied by them. And there's a really great gag that I wanted to play for you guys.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the beautiful and talented Leslie Ann Warren, accompanied by our very own Ralph.
Ole, 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 ole! Ole, thank you! Thank you! Gracias and thank you!
Where's Ralph? You're not Ralph.
No! I am the beloved Marvin Suggs! And these are my Muppaphones, and we will accompany you.
That's fine, but where is Ralph?
Who cares? Music maestro! Oh, Marvin, you are so talented!
Ow! Ow!
Ow! Ow!
Oh, it's... Ow! Please, Mr. Suggs, what are you doing?
Making the beautiful music.
These little creatures are alive and you're hitting them.
Of course they are alive. You cannot make music by hitting dead creatures.
But that's cruel.
Oh, it is cruel. You do not hear them complaining, do you? Shut up!
Hey, listen, I'm sorry I'm late, but somebody locked me in my dressing room.
Oh, who did it?
I'm not sure.
I saw Marvin going.
Shut up! I think I will change your names to the Finkophones.
That's enough of that. Hey, can we strike this whole thing? Strike the set, strike the Muppaphones.
Oh. I would love to!
And I think that the phrase, you cannot make music by hitting dead creatures, that is like, that's like a, that would be a nice little like kind of Reddit flair or something. Or like
an inspirational poster to put over your wall with, you know.
So he showed up again and again in the series. And that was, as far as I can tell, was like one of the last times he showed up in that series. But like T. Mike said, this actually was not an original gag. Years before, when Jim Henson was still having felt puppets stabbing each other, you had Arthur Ewing and his musical mice on Monty Python.
Right. From Monty Python.
So what's weird is that in 1971, the Pythons redid this bit for something completely different,
right,
which was like a
movie version of their TV material. Right. Yeah.
But what was weird is that they renamed him Ken.
Oh, that was important.
Oh, it makes sense to me. I mean, the first one, he's on a TV show as Arthur, and he gets kicked off because of, you know, using his musical mice. And then he had to change his stage name because he couldn't get work as Arthur anymore.
Right. So he got blacklisted.
I'll change it to Ken. They'll never think Ken Ewing.
That's a good theory. My theory was more of a Gallagher too. Was that like Arthur Ewing was the big celebrity and he was playing like the big bowls and, you know, like the big clubs. And then his younger brother Ken said, hey, I want in on some of that watermelon smashing. I mean, mouse smashing business.
I need to leave the accounting firm. Give me another job.
Yes. And I do think this is the second time we've mentioned Gallagher too on this podcast.
Oof.
He's going to ask for royalties if we keep it up.
He may not be still around. I'm not entirely sure if Gallagher too. Anyway, sticking with Monty Python.
Yes.
Actually going forward past when the Muppet Show was doing it in 1988, there was the incredibly underrated movie, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
That's a great movie.
I love that movie.
It's an amazing spectacle.
You are right. It is very underrated.
I was going to say, every time it's on TV, I watch it, but that would be a lie because it's never on TV. Oh. But every time I find it on streaming, I watch it because it's a great movie. But in the scene, it's a movie version of the Baron Munchausen stories, which he was supposedly an inveterate liar who told all these fantastical tales. And so he was meeting with the Grand Turk, who was the big enemy, and he was waiting for his servant to come back with the finest bottle of wine, I believe from Austria all the way to to Istanbul.
All right, that was Eric Idle's speed running character.
He was given 1 hour or something?
I think so, yeah.
To run all the way there and back.
And so he decided to play the overture from an opera, The Torturer's Apprentice, on this organ that it was kind of an organ of his own invention that has a cage in the back and a bunch of emaciated prisoners who are there poked. So let's listen.
I have been composing a short opera. Would you like to hear a song or two?
No, thank you.
Oh, you'll love it. It's a comedy. It's called The Torturer's Apprentice. Here's the overture. The curtain rises on a typical everyday torture chamber. Jothric, the young apprentice, sings of his joy in his job.
A torturer's apprentice went his merry way to work one day. I bend and stretch and ply my trade, making people all afraid. But things look black, business is slack, there's no one on the rack but me.
But yeah, so for those of you listening at home, which is all of you, it is these little poking things that are coming through and stabbing them to making them yelp along with the music.
Probably should have suggested before that they turn the volume down so people don't call the police with all the screaming that's happening.
Or turn the volume up and you might meet a nice policeman.
There you go. True. So this is just, well, so it's Terry Gilliam of Monty Python, right, who became the director of Baron Munchausen, is right, just reaching back to his Monty Python days and recycling this
right
bit.
He's I don't know if you can boil down the clip, the sketches to who actually wrote which one.
Well, but it was sort of like communal.
Yeah, he borrowed
pool.
It from that.
He
yeah
borrowed it. Okay, so Python invented it.
No.
No?
Oh, what? No.
Wait.
So you have to go back before that to a bit in July 14th, 1957 on Stan Freberg's radio show.
Oh, the great Stan Freberg was a great comedian. He has some great albums of stuff.
Yeah, he was like early radio satirist, very, yes, very funny. And so he had Mr. Marcel Toulet and his Tuned Sheep, and it was a sketch called the Tuned Sheep Sketch. So we'll hear a little bit of that.
What are the little bells tied around the sheep's neck? I noticed that. Will you ask him what they're for?
Monsieur Toulet, l'on te faisait la poxe de franvoiser le ding, 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 ding. What? He say, a lot of sheep have bells, but this sheep are tuned, says to make the chromatic scales, which he make use of by knocking the sheep on the head with his crook, a signal to them to ring the bell. He do it like this. Meh. In this manner, he can play different songs.
Well, that's very nice. I suppose he's going to play a little Ba-Ba Black Sheep for us, or something equally as appropriate.
I ask him, Monsieur Toulet, dis la mente per monsieur Ba-Ba Black Sheep.
Je t'aimerai de...
Oh, he is very offended, monsieur.
Yes, sounded that.
He says this sheep play only cool jazz, man.
Well, tell him on behalf of radio, I certainly didn't want to put down his sheep, but
He say, never mind, this no job. Just get on with it.
I see. Well, tell him, okay.
Commencez. That means start.
Oh, that's very nice.
Monsieur et madame. Commencez. No.
So, as you can hear, Freberg kind of downplayed the violence in
right
favor of actual music. So he actually, because I think he was also a musician too. Like, he was actually a fairly skilled musician.
Well, and I guess part of it is, over it's a radio show, it's kind of hard to really show the violence.
Yeah, that's
right.
You want to have point more of the just the music. Yeah.
Yeah, you would have just like screaming. So yeah. And by the way, we will have clips to YouTubes of all these things if you want to watch them. So you can actually violence yourself. So,
excellent.
But, so Stan Freberg invented it? No!
What?
I can do both parts.
but wait, no, there's more.
Before that, there actually was a short film, a film strip or cartoon, I guess it would be a cartoon of from Disney, of the Barnyard Concert, 1930.
Oh, these were probably the cartoons that we saw growing up, like in the complex, but it was before movies.
Yeah, before movies. Yeah, they would show them before movies. And so this is Mickey Mouse. So if you were one of those kids in the 80s who had the Disney Channel, they used to show these. I don't know if they still show them on there. I don't know.
The really old shorts.
I mean, yeah, Disney Plus, I'm sure maybe they have them somewhere, but I don't know if it's run on networks or.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't turned on a television for like an actual network in a long time. So, but right,
so what happens in the short?
So, well, here this is like the little bit of it that we're gonna play, and so as you can hear in this. The Mickey Mouse is running around and is trying to make music. And he's doing it by, it's the Barnyard Concert. So the animals are making the music. And so it's right kind of like a little thing. So he's pulling the tails of these little piglets to make music. So for those of you classical music stands out there, it's Franz von Suppé's Poet and Peasant.
Oh, Franz von Suppé.
Yes,
of course.
Exactly, yes.
My good friend, Franz von Suppé.
Yes.
So it was this the Steamboat Willie? Is this in the public domain as well now? Can we just,
can we steal it?
I don't think so. 1930.
Oh, so no, we got a couple of years to go.
We got a few more years.
Yeah. And so all of those are all like fairly within reasonable things. So, you know, it's like with a lot of things you can say, well, Disney came up with.
Yeah.
Like he came up with Snow White.
Right.
Exactly. Came up with Pinocchio. came up with Pocahontas.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Yes. So all many those, inventions of the Disney inventions, man.
Yes. No.
He came up with the Marvel movies.
The Marvel movies, yes. My wife once time showed me a great TikTok of a person saying one way of pissing off a man is to refer to these male like kind of were Marvel people as Disney adults. Like that's a good way of pissing someone off. So
I got to remember that one.
Our Star Wars fans too. So, so all of this actually is not new, and they evoke two weird Renaissance and early modern instruments.
Did we just jump from Mickey Mouse to the Renaissance?
Yes, but we'll have some stops along the way.
Wait, okay. So the Renaissance. We have not created the internet. We have not created the TV or radio or any way to record vision or audio. We're way out
there. Yes.
So everything that we usually focus on,
right?
99.99% of things we're going to talk about have not even been thought of yet. Where exactly. You're taking us. This is like one of the earliest fake bands we're going to get to.
Yes, it is possibly. I mean, I know that the Rocklopedia has got stuff from pre-biblical sources, I believe, of like
if you go to the ancient Greek myths and the Odyssey, Homer's Odyssey, there's a couple guys in there. Yeah. But
that is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Wait, does that mean we have to go to the museums and like look at paintings of bands and are those fake bands we're going to have to record? For an audio medium that
we'll have to do a great Renaissance paintings episode
maybe. As we're whispering our commentary.
That sounds like a
lot. Sir, stop talking in the gallery.
We have to. It's a fake band.
Get out.
So, no, these are actually references to two like kind of theoretical instruments, the pig organ and the cat organ. And I would, my tip for you is, don't Google those at work because that wouldn't be good. So the pig organ is also referred to as the hog harmonium, the swine way.
Oh, they got me with swine
way is good. The porco forte,
which I think I had that over at Monterey the other day.
Yes.
It was really
I wonder good. It backed up on you.
Or the pigano.
Nice.
Pigano.
You also see pigano forte. So according to a story repeated in Pascal Quignard's sixth treatise, Louis XI, The Musical Pigs, from La Haine de la Musique, which translates to a hatred of music.
oh, man. Okay, I got to find that in an English translation. That sounds awesome.
It is actually an English translation, yes. So Louis XI of France was talking with the abbot of Bain, a musician, about music. And the abbot said that gentleness is a characteristic of music. And so the king said, well, I challenge you to make music with pigs.
So, as kings do.
Yeah, that's random.
Hashtag no more monarchs, you know?
Yes. This is why we don't have a monarchy in America, people. Kings coming here saying, make music from pigs. How about you? How you like that one, smart guy?
So gentleness is a characteristic of music. And so then the king goes from there. Make music with pigs.
Yes.
Seems a bit of a leap, but okay.
there may have been some area in between. Again, I'm reading this in a translation.
Right, you're reading somebody else's.
My French stopped in, I believe, ninth grade. So, so the abbot accepted this bet, I guess because he'd been drinking, on three conditions. All the money he would need, a 1 month to prepare, and that the abbot could lead the singing. So what's weird is that there's weird details in there, like that he bought 32 pigs. So he had eight sows as tenors, 8 wild boars for bass.
Oh, of course.
8 altos and 8 boars as sopranos that he neutered himself.
Oh, he tuned his own pigs.
He tuned his own pigs by neutering them. And I don't think that.
Don't Google that either.
I don't think that the writer of this, the original writer, was all that clear on how castrati work. Like you
that's
don't
not how that. Yeah, that no, doesn't work like that.
You have
that
to kind now. Of. You need, there's some development time.
You have to get it before puberty. But even then, it's still a pig. I don't even. Does that even? Does
that would be a good question for our listeners at home.
Any veterinarians?
Do pigs' voices drop when they go through puberty? Do pigs have puberty?
And then would castrating them before puberty keep their sweet, high, dulcet tone squeals?
I cannot wait to get the responses from people. But I'm the expert in pig music. Yes. Let me tell you.
And then, my knowledge starts and stops with Miss Piggy. And that's about the end of my pig knowledge.
When did her voice drop?
She's a woman. She doesn't drop. You fool.
What a sow.
You didn't know you'd be learning about biology today, did you? Anyway.
I didn't think I'd be in the Renaissance either.
So anyway, so the abbot of Aubaine goes and says he built an instrument that looked like an organ with three keyboards and long copper wires topped with iron spikes.
Uh-oh.
So the pigs held in place with cages where they could be poked by the iron spikes.
Oh.
So here's a quote, which is a great quote. I don't know if anyone else has it up there. Charles, would you like to read this quote for us?
The result was an unknown music, truly harmonious. What? That is to say, polyphonic, very pleasant and varied to hear, because the Abbé d'Aubaine, who was an excellent musician, after starting with a canon, continued with two very beautiful
Ricorares,
and ended with three
motets
masterfully composed by him and which greatly pleased his majesty.
I like this quote a lot because it implies that you could be a really ass pig performer. Like, you could really suck at this instrument, you know? So
you're a virtuoso.
He didn't just invent it, he mastered it.
Well, yeah.
So the abbot in the story, which factual basis probably is very low, but so in
what?
In the story, the guy not only got the pigs to squeal in tune and tuned them, God help us all, and got to play it, but he actually made music that sounded good.
Yeah,
oh, he made a lot of music.
Not just coherent, but like pleasant. From the squealing of pigs, from a sow's ear, he made a literally a silk purse.
When you said
not literally,
he had three keyboards. I just had, you know, the part in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure when he had Beethoven at the music store and he had all the keyboards. I kind of figured that kind of setup, and he's just jamming away, and the big crowd around looking, and you just hear all this oinking everywhere. It would be a totally different scene in the movie, but it has kind of have that picture of him just like jamming away on all of his keyboards and moving around.
So the fun thing for me also is in the story after that little great quote was that the king went on to verify that it was actually pigs making the sound. Was it not another animal, I guess?
Or is that people dressed as pigs,
yeah,
I guess.
Right. Yeah, he didn't have some actual human singers hiding under some tarps.
But to his credit,
excuse me, are you a pig?
Oink.
No answer. Are you a pig?
But Louis XI, he was good at his word. He paid up and the abbot left with him, but he left with this great zinger. Sire, I taught pigs to say A, B in 24 days. In 34 years, I have not been able to teach it to king.
Ooh, burn!
Which is a great line. It would be greater if I knew what
A, B
was. I've taught pigs to say A, B means. So it's j'ai appris à des porcs à dire A, B. So I don't really know what that means, but it's a great line. So
it is.
And the other thing that's also kind of a mystery out of this little piece I'm drawing this from in Kinyard's piece is that the writer mentions that a Scottish nobleman was there. And when he saw it, he said cauld airn, which is Scots English for cold iron.
Okay.
So I looked around because I was curious about
why
this.
Did he say cold iron? I mean, I would probably say a lot of things if I saw pigs being tortured to make beautiful music. Don't think cold iron would be one of them.
Well, apparently it was actually just an expression. It was kind of like a shocked expression. But but what's weird is that so I found a site called Old Weird Scotland and a couple other references also mention this, that there was this belief that pork was taboo for Highlanders. So Highland Scots could not eat pork and actually really hated pork. And so
there can only be one Highlander if I were history. I mean,
this was, they were still working it out back then. That's why there's a lot of them.
So from what I understand, like cold iron is more or less like touch wood, you know, kind of like, so the pigs are like taboo.
Right. So he says, he's like, knock wood. I saw pigs. Yeah. I don't let him get near me.
Haggis, fine.
Oh, sure.
Give me all the
sheep
entrails,
sheep stomach entrails. I want, but pigs. Ooh, yeah. Yucky.
But like the matinee screening of Babe. Oh, touch wood. So yeah. Anyway, jumping forward. So jumping forward. So we're gonna stick with the pig organ for a little right. while. So
the Pigano.
All I know is I'm glad to be out of the Renaissance.
The swine way.
The swine way. Yes.
We'll be back there soon, but we're gonna jump to Civil War era to La Piganino Quick Step. So that was actually a popular song, and I found the sheet music and a little site that will play it for you, because I, you know, my wife can play piano fairly well, but I also have a toddler who wants to help. So we weren't really able to capture that. So more recently in 2000, there's a French film called La Libertine, which is not the 2004 Johnny Depp. So okay. This was another one that had, that actually depicted a Piganino being played.
Oh, wow.
And it was used to hide the noise of the presses printing Diderot's encyclopedia, which had been banned by the king.
Wow.
And so they, so this actually was.
That is a hell of a distraction.
And it was. And so this has this French film showing it, and it was 200 years after when it was being played in the original mention of it. And so you're probably listening to this on the internet, and we mentioned the internet already as being something that was invented post
post Piganos.
Post Piganos, yes.
Is, that's how most people remember it. The internet's yeah, post Pagano.
Post Pagano, yes.
Post Pagano era.
Mm-hmm. Anno Swineway. but because it's the internet, we have to have cats.
Oh, yeah, yeah, well, you're right. So, absolutely. Yeah.
Along with the pig organ, there is in fact something called the cat organ or the cat piano.
Oh, I think I know this.
No. You may be thinking of.
That's exactly what I'm thinking of. Yes. Isn't that what we're talking about?
No, not that cat piano.
Can we talk about him a little bit?
No, we're not talking about, well.
We'll save that for another show.
He is kind of a fake band, I guess.
we'll talk about him on another show.
I believe his name was Fats. My little factoid. And he passed away.
Yes. Oh, so sad.
Anyway, but we're not talking about Jingle Cats either, which was that that weird little trend of like.
And thank God we're not. Yes.
Or Scarlatti's Cat Fugue, which was supposedly inspired by the notes played by his cat when he walked across the harpsichord.
Are we talking about Cat Scratch Fever by Ted Nugent?
No.
Okay.
No. Nor Kitten on the Keys.
So we're going to bring it back with a little bit of Scarlatti. And then, so what we're talking about here is actually called the cat piano or the Katzenklavier in German. And it's very similar to the swine way, which is not a sentence I expected to really ever say.
They thought that'd come up.
No, I didn't know anything.
Now we're back in the Renaissance era?
Not quite. Okay. So,
because it seems like they would sure do love them torturing some animals.
Yeah, it's something we'll talk about that in a little bit. So our friends over at the Museum of Imaginary Musical Instruments, which is a great site.
It is.
They have a description of the instrument from an 1883 edition of La Nature, Popular Science Mag. It was kind of like, as far as I could get, it was like kind of like popular science or like, yeah, like it was kind of like a thing you'd get. I was assuming that in 1883, you'd go to the orthodontist and they would be there along with like,
Highlights.
Yeah. Das Highlights and Lay People and, Le US News and World Report. anyway, so they mention Father Kircher, who wrote about this in book 6 of Musurgia Universalis. So Father Kircher, of course, was
Kircher?
Yes.
Father Kircher?
Yes.
Father Athanasius Kircher?
That would be the Kircher we're talking about.
The German Jesuit scholar and polymath of the 1600s.
Yes, exactly.
The man referred to as the last Renaissance man who could claim securely to have broad knowledge of all topics when that was still possible.
I believe so.
Kircher. Oh, I know who you're talking about.
He published 40 different works on just about everything under the sun. He's considered the founder of Egyptology, that Kircher.
Yes, that would be the one.
The guy who had a crack at one of the first people to try cracking the Voynich manuscript, which is, you can Google that. That's something you can safely Google at work. But that's a great another rabbit hole to fall down if you're...
They knew most of this stuff. I thought TMF was about to surprise me by telling me that he was the first person to try crack, which would have actually been surprised me.
He also did made the first map of Atlantis, so there's that.
Oh, well, that's good. So in La Nature, they talk about how Father Kirchner wrote about an artist who invented, in order to dispel the melancholy of a prince who was beset by worries, a cat piano.
Wait.
Instead of strings, his instrument contained a number of cat's tails inserted into narrow sheaths, beneath which there went up and down the hammers of corresponding to keys, bearing on their extremities a sharp point. Once again, we get into some great little the mechanics of it. The cats were chosen by sex and age and arranged side by side in separate boxes according to the pitch of their voice. Under the agile fingers of the pianist, the points of the hammers artfully attacked the animal's tails.
Artfully? What do you mean artfully?
T-Mac, music must be gentle, remember?
Exactly.
Don't make me King Louis back in here to talk to you about
that Louis the 11th.
The theory of music. So these responded first with meows quick and sharp, but then, enraged by the frequency of the pricks, they changed crescendo et rinforzando into sounds that could enliven the most sullen spirit and make even the mice break out in dance.
Wait, I miss the point about the mice before? Where were their mice? Did they have mice around there with the cats?
No, I just want to know what kind of...
Is this Cinderella where they have the mice that make things for them? Where did the mice come from?
This is the first thing of the mice I remembered in this quote.
It's the Renaissance. Dancing. There's mice crawling everywhere, giving everybody the Black Death, whatever. Look, you're telling... So a prince... The mentally troubled prince is brought out of his depression by the sound of yowling cats being tortured.
Yes.
Lisa,
now I could see
play the cats again.
The only way that works for me is if he jumps up to strangle the pianist and goes, "Why? No, I'm out of my misery because I must destroy the man who is sitting here torturing cats for his amusement." And Pope,
are you a prince? Are you depressed? Ask for Cat-tosin.
Please play that song again. I loved it when they started getting really upset. Yes.
I think it's time to return to our friends over in Schoolhouse Rock with a little clip.
With no more king.
We're going to elect a president.
No more king.
He's going to do what the people want.
No more king.
We're going to run things our way.
No more king.
Nobody's going to tell us what to do.
Yes, no more kings. No more kings would be a good idea.
Hashtag no more monarchs.
Oh, hashtag no more monarchs.
No more monarchs.
No more kings. All right. So as T-Meg mentioned, Father Kirchner, Athanasius Kirchner, he was a German Jesuit scholar, and he wrote about it.
My favorite German Jesuit scholar, by the way.
He's up there.
I'm going to say top 10.
Top three. Top three. Anyway, never mind. Go ahead, Al.
Where was he in the Ruddles? Anyway, he wrote about this in 1650. So this is not Renaissance. This would probably be early modern era. So he was actually just repeating some of the lore about the cats and clavier that have been circulating for years, which is really, I think, a great thing about a lot of, like, most scholarship. It's really only been in the last century or so that we actually, like, cite and you have to do your own work. You could actually become fairly famous just by repeating some crap someone told you. So. But
it was a gentler time.
Gentler time, yes. French composer Jean-Baptiste Wecquerlin wrote about an early historian, Juan Cristóbal Calvete, And he reported seeing a cat piano during his travels with King Philip II of Spain in 1548 and 1549.
Oh, my head's starting to hurt. Now you guys have just, you've taken me past.
Well, I was just going to ask you if you wanted to, with your mellifluous voice, to read a little bit about the visit. We have a very long quote here that we wanted to share with you.
All right, let me go. Okay. Hello. When the King of Spain, Felipe II, was in Brussels in 1549, visiting his father, the Emperor Charles V, what a great name. Each saw the other rejoicing at the sight of a completely singular procession. At the head marched an enormous bull whose horns were burning, between which there was also a small devil. Between the bull, behind the bull, a young boy sewn into a bear's skin, ride on a horse whose ears and tail were cut off.
Why?
Then came the archangel Saint Michael in bright clothing and carrying a balance in his hand. The most curious was on a chariot that carried the most singular music that can be imagined. It held a bear that played the organ instead of pipe.
You could stop there. Really, you could just stop and be done, but no.
Instead of pipes, there were 16 cat heads, each with its body confined.
Yeah, these are not disembodied heads. These are just, they saw the cat heads with and their bodies were trapped.
Bodies confined. Their tails were sticking out and were held to be played as the strings on a piano. The key was pressed on the keyboard. The corresponding tail would be pulled hard and it would produce each time a lamentable meow. The historian Juan Cristobal Calvete noted the cats were arranged properly to produce a succession of notes from the octave
chromatically, I think. That's the best thing. There's a little note they're saying chromatically, I think.
And not a pentonically.
I mean, again, remember, this is a French composer. He's more interested in, like, how did this thing work? Is there a bear playing it?
This abominable orchestra arranged itself inside a theater where monkeys, wolves, deer and other animals danced to the sounds of this infernal music.
Wow, these ancient kings really knew how to party.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So first there was a bull whose horns were on fire.
Mm-hmm. Then a kid sewn
with a devil sitting between it.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, all right.
It could have been a child sewn into a devil suit. We don't know.
But then behind it, you got a young boy sewn into a bear skin. Who's riding a horse whose ears and tail cut off.
Why would you even mention that? Why wouldn't you? How is that even relevant?
And then you have the archangel Saint Michael.
He's the least weird thing about this procession. The
least weird thing is an angel came down from heaven to be in this weird procession.
Well, I also like the fact they mention he's in bright clothing.
Yeah.
So it's not like his normal drab.
Well, that's how you know. No. This is how you know it's an angel.
He's not in his brown suit that he wears at work. His
shining raiment.
And then you have that in your mind. Then it's like the most curious.
The cat piano is like the second or third weirdest thing in that group.
With a bear that plays this organ. So the bear is sitting there
pushing the
buttons to pull the cat tails
to make the music, to make the king happy.
The lamentable meows.
So we've been talking about the nerves of the cat piano, but one of the really interesting things is that the first image of a cat piano actually predates the invention of the piano by almost a century. Thomas Pattison and Deirdre Longridge in the Public Domain Review, they actually found the first visual depiction of a cat piano was in Johann Theodor de Bry's 1596 Emblematata Secularia Mira et Jucunda Uriate Seculae Julius Mores Ita
You could stop any time now, Alan.
Sudditium symbolis.
That's a lot of Latin.
Yeah. I don't know. Charles has a son who was like a Latin award winner, and he really should have brought him in for some like.
We should have.
We could give him a call.
We could always re-record this, and you wouldn't hear any of this. Anyway.
Wow.
So all of that. So 1596.
So we might want to point out the difference, what the defining characteristic of a piano
versus
other keyboard instruments at the time.
Let's slow our roll, because the piano didn't come along. The drawing was from 1596. The piano came along in 1700.
Right.
So the difference was that a harpsichord and earlier ones were plucked,
right?
Whereas a piano was hammered. The strings are there and it's hammered. A harpsichord is basically a harp on its side and you pluck it.
Right.
So someone
finger does. Yeah.
Someone actually thought, hey, let's make music by hitting these cats, before they thought, hey, we could hit this harpsichord strings
with a hammer
and make music.
Look at hammer. What hit with hammer make music good? String of musical instrument already in existence? No. Animal.
I'd like to think that the people who invented the piano actually used the cat organ as, you know, how can we perfect
it? What if we took the cat organ and instead just used ordinary harpsichord strings? That's crazy enough to work.
Over 100 years before that.
Yeah.
This just puts more meaning to the phrase "get medieval" on one's ass.
We started with the Muppets.
Yes,
we started at the Muppaphone,
and now we're back.
Want to remind you where this all began?
this started with some nice, cute, little, funny
Muppets, and now we're torturing animals in the medieval era. Thanks a lot. Frank Oz is
doing yet another voice that kind of sounds like Miss Piggy, and hitting some cute little fuzzy guys on all range there. Now we're in the Middle Ages. So along with this, as we mentioned about how the pig organ could be a soothing sound.
Yeah, sure.
So in the early 1800s, a German doctor named Johann Christian Reil, who was actually the guy who coined the word psychiatry.
Oh wow!
Wasn't Freud.
No.
Wow.
He wrote that
Freud was an alienist.
I
think that's how with the terminology they were using.
I don't know.
Anyway, go ahead. Never mind.
Anyway, a word in edgewise, perhaps? Anyway, he wrote that the cats and clavier would be just the thing to help chronic daydreamers get back to reality.
That's technically true.
It's not a bad... So in Mental Floss, they did a story about this a few years ago, and he has this great quote, Lucas Riley has this quote in there, that a fugue played on this instrument, when the ill person is so placed that he cannot miss the expression on their faces and the play of these animals, must bring Lot's wife herself from a fixed state into conscious awareness.
Yeah, if somebody's torturing animals in front of you, I think that does kind of tend to snap you back to reality a bit. So first the sad prince, and now mental illness patients.
Yes.
We're going to use this on.
Yes.
Wait, so, and Lot's wife was turned into salt.
Yes.
So it will take you from salt. If you were a person who was turned into salt, you'll go right back to a person after seeing
this. Which I think in the 1800s, they had a plague of that. There's a lot of people turning into salt back then.
Big piles of salt everywhere. Yeah, just start playing this cat music.
Everything. Oh, wow.
But what
isn't it good for, really?
What's funny is that the people who write about this, especially I don't know whether this is emblematic of our modern era, but Riley and a bunch of other people who wrote about this make a go bend over backwards, pointing out the cat piano isn't real. So the Smithsonian magazine, they lead their story with that fact, which is kind of hilarious, as though because no one really wants to hear about cats being tortured. But if it's just in theory, or it's look at those funny things that people used to think, that's okay. But it's weird. It's actually stuck in people's head, this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2009, there was a short animated film for the People's Republic of Animation called The Cat Piano. And it actually has a poet who has to save the city from it's like a cat private eye, whatever. And he's a poet, but he's pressed into service to save his cat citizens from being taken over by a cat piano.
that's who you call. You usually call poets.
Usually poets, yeah.
So it took until the era of the animated cartoon until they could breathe life of a sort into this cat piano.
Well, finally, I think finally at that realization, it took until the early 2000s for people to say, maybe this wouldn't be soothing.
It did. In probably 2009, we realized we could fight back against the cat piano.
You're right. Mickey Mouse was still like, this is a good idea. Yeah, pluck tails.
So slightly nicer is actually a sound artist, Henry Dagg's take on it, the cat piano, which is called the Catastrophony, which is great because it's 16 cat-shaped squeaky toys that he uses to play Over the Rainbow.
Phew.
And they're actually this. A lot of people heard about this because it went viral with Prince when he was then Prince Charles, watching him play and kind of really smiling god awful awkward smile. But it was at like a little outdoor party, and he was playing it.
So the guy we just heard got to play for British royalty.
Yes, yeah, Henry Deck.
Wow,
he's actually a fairly well known sound artist, composer kind of person. Yeah,
okay.
So, I mean, all of these other instruments were played for royalty. Why wouldn't this? Right.
That's an excellent
point.
The cats
and clavers. Apparently, and the bears
sued. You could have seen how soothed Charles was.
Charles V was so soothed.
No, dude. This just shows you how inbred royalty is. Hashtag no more monarchs. How inbred royalty is that the sound they find the most soothing is that of animals being tortured.
Please play the cats again.
So what's funny is that since then, there's other things. So actually, a person who goes by Muser23 created a little virtual cats and clavier that you can play. We'll link to that as well on MIT's a little scratch coding site. It's actually kind of a fun little thing, and you can play with it and do it yourself. And so, so we've actually moved back. We're coming back out of the Renaissance. So you're back there.
Glad you got us back to the internet.
Well, we're not staying right here now for a little while.
So. Where are we ping-ponging now? The time traveling.
Because
head, it's whirling.
Because this, you can actually tweak it a little bit, because all of these have been instruments that make sound from people or things or animals being hit or poked, which I believe is an idiophone for you music theory people.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, idiophones.
Mm-hmm.
I will agree. Circle gets the square.
Yes. So, Jules Verne, actually, so we're going back in time again. He went a little farther in making an instrument out of living things. He has a short story called Monsieur Le Diez et Mademoiselle Mi Demol, which is basically Mr. Ray Sharp and Miss B Flat. So
it's a musical joke with the puns. Yeah.
So 1893, and he describes an organ with a register made of actual children's voices.
Wait, and, what?
Yeah, so the organ in this case would be an aerophone, of course.
Yes,
which I know you're all wondering at home. So Verne actually talks about the cat piano in the story. And so in the story, Master Ephraim, who was the guy who invented this organ he's writing about, he comes to town after the town's musician goes deaf and the organ falls into disrepair. So he promises to repair the organ, but instead of repairing it, he finds 16 kids
and assigns them.
He assigns them each a single note of the chromatic scale. And then he seals them into the appropriate pipe of the pipe organ.
Why didn't he just hit them with hammers? Why did he have to seal them in pipes?
It could have been so much worse. So,
could have been sewn into a bearskin, but
Verne actually creates some good dread in the piece, which is actually interesting. I'd never actually read it before this, but Mr. Ray Sharp. He's waiting for the performance. And so it's a Christmas mass and it move along and the kids are just kind of waiting for the organist to play. And then
in their tubes.
Yes. A melody sweet and piercing flies up beneath the vaulted roof of the church at the moment when the divine mystery is accomplished. I can hear the so of Hawk, the la of Farina. Then it is the me flat of my dear next door neighbor. Then an air current inflates my chest. A current skillfully controlled, which carries the ray sharp out of my lips. I want to be silent, but I cannot. I am nothing but an instrument in the organist's hands. His touch upon the keyboard is like a valve opening in my heart. Oh, how excruciating it is. No, if it keeps on like this, the sounds that we emit will no longer be musical notes. They will be cries of pain. And how can I depict the torture I feel when Master Ephraim plays with his terrible hand a chord of the diminished seventh in which I take the second place, do natural, re sharp, fa sharp, la natural. As the cruel, the merciless artiste prolongs it interminably, I fall into a faint. I feel that I'm dying, lose consciousness.
Did Edgar Allan Poe write this or Jules Verne?
Well, spoiler alert, it was all a dream.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Boo. What a cop out.
Cut open the pipe and put in a new person because he's like passed out and everything.
Yeah, it was all a dream, which no matter how great of a writer you are, that's just a hell of a cop out.
Totally.
That's what
Jules Verne, boo.
And boo Dallas while you're at it,
yes,
right?
Boo Dallas.
Wasn't that in Dallas? The TV show, of course.
Yes. Yes, not Steve Dallas.
All you fine listeners in Dallas, we're not booing you.
Yeah,
no.
So
the TV show.
and not the manager, Billy and the Boingers, also a fake band, but we'll get to them later on.
Different Dallas.
We'll get to where are we?
I have no idea.
I don't even know what century we're in anymore, Alan.
So we've gone from like felt-covered hand puppets beating on each other.
Yes.
All the way to the Renaissance and back.
And I just want to thank you for making beating hand-covered felt puppets seem like the good ending.
Yes.
Okay.
It is worth kind of wondering why this gag keeps coming back up.
Apparently, kings love it.
Yeah. But I mean, think of it, like, you know, on the Muppet Show, I mean, it was funny. I mean, you watch it. It's funny. I was actually looking for YouTube clips because I'm lazy and it was easier to grab things off YouTube than record off Disney Plus. But I was actually looking for clips of it. And there's several clips on there and it has people that I guess they recorded it on their phones or whatever, but them laughing at the bit. And yeah, it is a funny bit.
Well, I think part of what pulls it off is it's the cartooniness that only animation or a Muppet can bring to it.
Right.
That removes you from the horror of it actually existing.
Right. I mean, the Muppets do it and the from Monty Python, them doing it. It's hilarious as well.
No, it is, but it's hilarious in a different way.
It's just the absurdity of it all.
Yeah. Exactly. Right? Yes.
That there's somebody who thought I could make music by beating these animals.
Yeah.
And he practices it enough to the point where he thinks I'm pretty good. I can get a show. And then he goes and gets an agent or goes to like the booking, the club, and they watch him and they say, oh, he's pretty good. And so they find a time slot for him. And then that's where we come in, where he's already there. And the only reason why they stop him is because the audience is booing.
Yeah. And that's a great point, Charles. Now come with me back to the Middle Ages.
Why did I make that point?
Well, because where the good question, like, why do we laugh when people get hurt? And and that's why the Middle Ages, actually 1650, in Human Nature or the Fundamental Elements of Policy, Thomas Hobbes of Leviathan fame.
Wait.
The giant tiger.
Yes, the giant tiger. Yes, indeed. The large tiger,
who
may or may not be real. He said laughter at others came from a feeling of superiority. And so the quote from him is, laughter is nothing else but sudden glory arising from some sudden conception of some eminency in ourselves by comparison with the infirmity of others or with our own formerly.
By torturing small animals musically.
Hobbes kind of makes it everyone else is jerks. Like, people are jerks. The reason we laugh is because we feel better than other people. Henri Bergson actually talked about this, and he said that kind of what Charles was saying is that laughter requires detachment from the seriousness of the situation. Right. So you could actually still laugh at this. And a lot of people, like the musical mice, I mean, I showed the clips to my wife and she was like, that's horrible. Like, that's horrifying. That's,
yeah, but the musical mice bit, it twists it because it's like, you think it's going to be some amusing bit and that they and like Python loves to do, they just dive into the horror of it right away. I mean, on the Muppet Show, it's like, you know, it's all ha-ha. Look, isn't this ridiculous? Right. They're not real things. But the Python bit is like grabbing you by the back of the head and rubbing your nose in it, going, look, this isn't just bad. Look how awful this actually would be. And the fact that the guy is like trying to sing along and he's like so loud, he's like drowning out whatever noise the mice are making anyway, just making the whole thing pointless. Right. It's just even worse.
But in a lot of ways, it kind of gets the whole Leslie Ann Warren thing, is that she serves as our avatar, you know, because she was, you know, large and blue and but she's our avatar. But the audience in that case, in the Monty Python thing, you have people, the audience going, oh my God, stop him, make him stop.
Right,
yeah. So there is that. But it's interesting because I found a story in UCLA, ABC News quoted this UCLA professor who talked about how the context is really what makes kind of how it's presented drives how we react to it. And it's just the idea of like the play frame about you see it with little kids. Or I mean, one of the things, of course, is the dog. You know, dogs is that when they get the little play pose and like, okay, we're not really fighting. We're actually wrestling.
Play fighting. So. Yeah, exactly. I mean, even animals get it.
I mean, go back to like Baron Munchausen. If you see a movie and, you know, a Sultan is torturing somebody, that's not very funny.
Right.
But the whole premise of, I'm making this song, The Torturer's Apprentice, and here's my organ.
He's written an opera
Yeah.
And also what's also made by the fact that the Baron is incredibly bored by it. And so he's like sitting there, like looking around. He's like very bored by
checking the time.
People. Yeah. Checking time, looking at, thinking of this thing like that. So, so we are now back in modern time, I think. Our time traveling has ended.
Did we make it back okay?
Yes, we make it back okay.
I'm a little, I do believe, I feel a little lightheaded, Alan.
So, no matter what causes it, though.
Maybe some cat organ would make me snap out of this.
You're no prince.
That's true.
I guess that would be the big question. Sadly, he is gone now, but would, in fact, a cat organ make Prince relax? Prince the musician relax?
Prince would have made it funky.
Oh, he would have made it funky, yes. But I think no matter what causes it, how it works, I think we can all agree that hitting things smaller than you with mallets is just good comedy. I think it's So,
but is it good music, Alan?
All that matters is a comedy. And I have a mallet right here.
Ah, and get away from me.
T-Mike is smaller than me.
He is.
So, Charles.
You stay away, buddy.
If you will, wrap up. And I'm going to go do some experimentation. So, and I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Rockopedia Fake Bandicoot, production of the Van Gogh Sketch Comedy Group. Hosts are Alan Benson, T-Mike Charles, and Charles Rumpel. With occasional cameos from Jim Krasinski, Aaron Black, and Rob Check out the date.